was an easy topic to want to deal with. Someone's got a historic anniversary about to happen. Someone has a movie that's talking about a historic moment in that southern city. So Selma is a topical subject, easy to go there. And as I sat and pondered what I might say to you all about Selma, I tried to remember where I was as Selma became known to the world and to our nation. I remember looking at that black and white square, it was like a square television sitting in my parents' living room as those news events were shown to us. My father had to watch the news each evening. I seemed to be my father's son. I sit in front of the tube and I do it too. Selma troubled me as a boy, and Selma continues to trouble me. So this service, I wanted to consider what was for us as a Unitarian Universalist community, what is for us as a national community, and what may still come for both the Unitarian Universalists and our nation. And I found myself drawn to a story I saw on CNN about Selma Now. Have any of you seen that piece? It was very interesting. They went and they highlighted the dramatic change that's taken place in Selma. If you didn't know, this city that was once about 50-50 black and white is now 80% black and 20% other, white, Latino, Asian. There are some others there, but predominantly a black city now. Selma also has a black police chief and a black mayor and a black fire chief, and almost everyone in the hierarchy of the city of Selma now is black. And this is a radical departure from what was during that historic moment. If we think about when Martin Luther King Jr. and those folks, those freedom fighters, called on people to come to Selma and join them in solidarity as they attempted to cross that, is it the Edmund Pettus Bridge? Anybody here know who Edmund Pettus was? Most of us don't know. He was a Confederate officer that they named that bridge after. Must be hard as a person of color, a Jewish person, anybody who's not a Protestant white person to cross a bridge named after a general of the Confederacy. That's hard. That's hard, I think. So as I sat with my thoughts and struggled with my thoughts because I remember the tears coming to my eyes, Lisa had a brilliant idea and we took our three boys to see the movie Selma. Any of you see Selma? It was a very, I think, a well-made film. More than being a well-made film, it brought to the national attention human rights, the human rights story in a black and white way, which sometimes gets swept under the rug as we deal with the multicultural tapestry of the United States. I would always be the first to say we never dealt with the Native Americans and we never dealt with the African Americans, and now we have large numbers of Latinos and Asians, and we haven't begun to deal with anybody's connection to this American experiment very well yet. There's been no truth and reconciliation, and while we've made forward progress, there's so much work to do. But as I watched the film and shed tears that day, "Hands up, don't shoot" kept resonating in my mind. "I can't breathe" kept resonating in my mind. The troubles of America present day were being juxtaposed with the screen in my mind. And I couldn't help but wonder, where were those who were protesting today in terms of their understanding of what took place in Selma? You see, because Selma wasn't just about fighting against the injustice of oppressive practices by a police force or an economic system that continues to hold people in a less than humane way. Selma in 1964, 65, was about gaining some basic rights that were being withheld from people. It was very specific. The fight to get your rights. And that was one struggle that most people of good conscience could maybe at least understand, even if they didn't want to grant privilege to others that they deserved, that they legally were supposed to have. And the struggle now with police practices and entrenched poverty are very different. There is no constitutional piece that directs the police on how they need to behave exactly. There is no constitutional mandate on how long a police officer should hold their gun in check before they fire on somebody. As we see our legal system work its way through cases, rarely do police get held accountable for their actions in the way that the communities of color, communities of poor, communities of concerned citizens for a real and lived out free America for all. The court system doesn't match up with what many of the people think, right? The guy in Ferguson, they just exonerated him, right? No civil rights violations done there, right? He didn't call the young man the N-word before he shot him or something, right? That would be a clear violation. Oh, he was an open racist. No, that wasn't the case. It's just that in America, black lives didn't matter back in 1950s. And in many ways, black lives still don't matter. So my return to Selma is like a return to the smack I need upside my head. Brother, not much has changed, and I don't care what Obama does or how many middle-class Negroes you all may have in Montclair, which is lovely. It's lovely. You've got a few nice middle-class Negroes there. La-di-da, la-di-dee. The fact remains that 40% of men killed in this country in homicide cases are black men, and less than 10% of those cases are ever brought to any resolution by our police department. That's a national statistic. And it was brought to my attention by a policeman that I know who said, did you see the piece on the internet? And I went looking and I found it on CNN's website about a police detective in L.A. whose son was murdered by the gangs in L.A. And even having a black man on your force doesn't necessitate a full investigation. It was just like, oh, well, just another black male dead and gone. Sweep it under the rug. So, Selma and us. I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister because I believe in interfaith work. The UU movement is the only religious structure in the United States that allows for us to bring Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, pagan, theosophical, the spectrum of spiritual and religious thought together in a sacred space. It's the only one that does it in some 1,100 congregations coast to coast. There is no interfaith movement in the United States save what we do. So that's why I'm here. Because when I went to seminary, I wanted to be like Dr. King. I just didn't know who to serve, how to serve, where to serve. I wanted to fight for justice. I was on fire for justice, and I had to find a vehicle. So our movement became my vehicle. Because I knew I could get people from across the religious spectrum to come together and work for some cause, whether it be feeding the hungry or housing the homeless or fighting for the lack of human rights that are extended to all in this nation. Then I learned about James Reed. Not that I had known that a white minister died, because I remember all the politicians I knew, and I knew those people from across the river. Percy Sutton, who was the first black borough president for the city of New York, who should have been the first black mayor of the city of New York, but Percy cut a deal and Abe Beame got the job. I just happen to know that because those are the people my parents associated with. The dialogue about things was that Lyndon Johnson got so engaged because a white clergyman, a white Protestant clergyman, had been murdered, and those Southern insane fools had to be stopped. It wasn't because another black man had been killed. There were black bodies in the fields and swamps all over Alabama, all over Mississippi, all over Louisiana, all over Texas, all over South Carolina. This is nothing new in America. It's nothing new for the police in urban ghettos to gun down black men or toss them in jail like they don't count, don't matter. Death of black males is never the issue. The fact that a white Protestant minister could be killed, the nation couldn't have that. There's the impetus for all of those actions that our president took. But learning about James Reed gave me great heart. It made me feel like Unitarian Universalism wasn't just a space for interfaith, but it was a space that committed itself to justice works, not just giving lip service to it. James Reed and Viola Luzzo, help me with her name. Luzzo. Hey, I gotta get this. Imagine a Negro from Harlem could say something. She Italian? She Italiano, man. Luzzo. Right, I'm gonna get this thing. That these people cared so deeply about the other. Now, Cindy's not here this morning, but I can hear her telling us about her amazing transformation when she went from her Eastern Shore, Maryland community, which is racist as all get out to this day. If you go on Eastern Shore, Maryland, it's like Cracker Town. I hate to say it, but it's true to this day. She went from out there on Eastern Shore and went to Washington, D.C. and heard heard Dr. King preach, and it transformed her immediately. I don't think she knew she was going to become a UU. I think she owes that to Georgiana. I think Georgiana brought her to our movement. But Cindy was transformed by words that resonated in her heart. She lost her boyfriend that day, essentially. He called her an N-lover. I won't say that word. I despise that word. I gotta be really mad to say that word. Her family was like sick of her. Cindy's a badass, I can say that. I love Cindy. Nevertheless, Unitarian Universalists didn't just give lip service to justice. They put themselves on the line. They died for people they really didn't know. Because by and large, blacks and whites within this religious movement don't worship together, don't live together, don't dine together. This morning in Montclair, I was so glad to hear Charles Ortman raise up this congregation as he mentioned that the minister that was here went over there to Montclair to help them when they were just getting started. And he spoke about a letter that an elderly black woman from South Carolina wrote, an 83-year-old, who wrote them when they were celebrating their 100th anniversary, and who said that the Montclair Unitarian Congregation was maybe the only place in Montclair that wasn't racist and segregated. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what she said. That they had a religious education program way back in the early part of the last century that was open to little Negro children. And this old lady called herself black, so I was like hawking by that, because my grandmother was forever colored. She never became a Negro. She never became African American. She was colored. That was her moniker, and she stuck to it. All right, Greg. Greg will get me. I'm making things bounce around here. So Montclair has a good history in that congregation of doing justice work as well. So it's not a far-fetched thing. I'm going to imagine that this Orange congregation has a history of being open to blacks and to Latinos and to others when other congregations just weren't open. And so our movement remains this kind of seminal space where we do the right thing. We ordained the first woman in this country. We had the first openly gay minister, Scott Alexander, my friend. Where are you today, Scott? I got to find him. We have been on the cutting edge for a long time, and that gives me heart and strength. But we've got to do more, and that's where revisiting or returning to Selma brings me full circle. For despite the fact that Selma is different in its leadership, they have less than 40% voter participation in this mostly black city. And despite the fact that they have a black police chief and most of the officers on the force now are black, they just gunned down and killed a 70-year-old black man. Now, he must have been mentally ill. Apparently, he had a hatchet or something in his hand, and he was menacing. And they shot this 70-year-old dead. I was in the Navy. We're not a bunch of badasses. We're not Marines. We had target practice. I'm a bad shot. But even I can hit something lower on a body than a torso. Policemen are marksmen, at least supposedly. And so there's a black attorney who's been in Selma since the 1970s. She has been fighting a battle down there. Her name is Tori. Tori is her last name. She, Faye Rose Tori. She runs freedom information tours around Selma and civil rights speak-ins and all kinds of things. She's been fighting the fight for a long time. And the black leadership of Selma, they want her to go away now. They say, you bring negative, you know, news to our community. We're not trying to just live in the past, but it's not the past. See, despite the fact that you have blacks in positions of power, they act just like the white power structure, essentially. It's a funny thing. I've had many African friends over the course of my life, and despite the fact I was president of the Pan-African Society in my college, they said, Gordon, you're not an African. You smell like a white man. You talk like a white man, essentially. I get a little something-something in my speech, but essentially, all the characteristics of Gordon are like he's a white guy. What's my Africanness, huh? I'm not particularly good with my dancing. I got a little something, but it's not all of that. There are white guys who can dance better than me. The point being that despite the fact that there have been changes, whether it's an Obama or a governor here or there, or a senator here or there, Carol Marsley Braun, or New York had a black governor by chance, Governor Patterson. Things haven't really changed. Selma is a black eye on America that remains a black eye. The unemployment rate in Selma is over 50% for black males. Their education system is so poor that the current mayor sent his wife and daughter back to North Carolina, where they were from, because he said, "I tried, but I can't allow my daughter's life to be destroyed by the lack of a competent education system." The reality is that Selma is worse off economically today than it was in the 1950s. Selma needs attention on a national level, not because of the racial conflicts that continue to be part and parcel of the American experiment, but because the fact is black lives don't matter, whether it's in Selma, Newark, Orange, New York City, which is the blackest place in the United States. The single blackest place in the United States is the city of New York, or any place else. Now, the district attorney down in Selma said, we are not Ferguson and we are not Staten Island, New York. The leadership here has ascended. We are not under Jim Crow nor slavery anymore. Those are perhaps, in his words, the greatest manifestations of what happened. But look at us now. Well, we need to look with a critical analysis. Black leadership doesn't mean black ascent to fecal. Maybe where am I going? Fecal. We'll have to touch on that one in a private conversation, won't we? Fecal. My granddaughter here goes to an inner city school, and the fact is that they are building prisons for girls at an increasing rate because little black girls are not achieving at the level they need to be achieving at. Our friends here came back from Jamaica, beautiful island destination. Sad reality is most of the black inhabitants of Jamaica can't even go to the beaches of Jamaica anymore. There are only a few public beaches in Jamaica. They are held off for the rich Americans and Europeans who come to vacation there. Civil rights equals human rights for me, and there is no more time for us just to celebrate what we did in the past. There is no greater time for us to do something than now. The people in Selma are getting prepared because on March 8th of this year, the 50th reunion will happen and thousands will descend upon Selma. I don't know if any of us can go. I'd like to find out if there's a few of us that might make that ride down there together. It's a long drive, but who knows, we can make a movie out of it, riding to Selma. Bunch of Orange, New Jersey folks, Essex County folks going to Selma. The reality is that things have to change, and they have to change in a radical way. The spirit of Selma lives, but it doesn't live within our Unitarian Universalist hearts in the way that it should. When I Googled this morning, Selma UU, I found no Selma UU. It then told me that the closest UU was in Montgomery, which is over 50 miles. That's the walk they were going to make, right? 50 miles from Selma. You see, we haven't even had the capacity to go to Selma and create the James Reeb and Viola Uso congregation and bring those 20% of white folks who dare to live with 80% black folks to a congregational setting together. We haven't dared to have the audacity to change the nature of the dialogue in this nation in such a way that real change is possible. I don't want to talk about Obama or any of the nonsense that these black elected officials seem to keep uttering. I want black children to read at the same level white children read. I want black health care in the ghetto hospitals to be as good as the health care in the suburban or rural hospitals. And the rural white folks are suffering too. As I'm often reminded when I go upstate to my house, those poor white folks are in bad shape. They're not like the Massachusetts white folks. They're in tough shape upstate New York. That's poor white trash, I hate to say it, but that's what they're called. Trailer parks, we got a lot of them upstate. We've got to do something, folks. So what we're doing in this congregation has been a shining light for those to see, but too few people see it or know about it. What you all do and say in Montclair is wonderful. You tutor children, you feed the hungry, you do a whole host of things. But I've preached there and I've been there. There are too few black people in your congregation. Why is that when you have educated Negroes in Montclair? See, Unitarians Universalists say black folks won't come in because it's too intellectual, it's too heady, it's the music's too boring. Sometimes. It also says something more about who our friends are. Bring a friend Sunday is every Sunday. Thank you, Mindy. Thank you, Brandy. I think this may be more than a friend, but I'm going to find out. See, as a minister, I get to probe into your personal life. Return to Selma means get on board the bus, people. And I'm not saying you good white folks and you few folks of color haven't written the checks and haven't done something. But we've got to do more. We keep lauding and applauding what we've done, and what we've done has given us a 20%, 25% black middle class who lives like white folks. They're honorary white folks and they live their lovely middle class white-like lives. I'm looking for transformation of a nation that continues to keep its foot on the back of its poorest people, its poorly educated people, its immigrants. I'm looking for our movement to be that cutting edge that we have been in the past for women's rights, for gay rights, GBLT, for people of color rights. We need to be that shining star again. So get on board with me, and I don't know whose life we're going to change. I don't know who this congregation is about to adopt, because we surely are going to adopt somebody. We're going to transform somebody's lives that's in need of help right here in Orange. That's what the mission of this congregation says it will do, isn't it? I didn't make that up, did I? It says we will be committed to this little community. By God, if we just send one little black girl, one little Latino boy to college, then we'll have done something. But let's commit to it and let Selma be not the highlight of what we as Unitarian Universalists have done, but part of a historic legacy that is going forward like the arc of the moral universe. Thank you. Amen.